The UAA has now commissioned a competition to hire the next architect to renovate Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Tonight, we get into all of what might be happening with the design and the future of the Swamp as we know it. This is the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. And good evening, everybody. I am your host, Chris Yanes, along with my co-host, Neil Shulman, and we have got an exciting football episode to discuss with you tonight regarding the stadium football renovations that are starting to heat up about all that talk, and just in time for the football season, with we're only a couple weeks away from fall camp and a little over a month away from the first football game. But before we do that, I want to shout out our sponsor of the program, and that is Stingray Branding. These folks will put a sting into your marketing and will deliver results that will wow your clients. Whether it's web design, logo design, branding, graphic design, social media management, search engine optimization, marketing strategy, or mobile app design, Stingray Branding has you covered. If you or someone you know needs professional help in any of the above, here are three great reasons why you should choose Stingray Branding. One, it's a veteran-owned business. Can't think of a better way than to properly thank those who serve them by giving them your business. Two, it's run by UF alum and big-time Gator fan. And three, they've got the personal stamp of In All Kinds of Weather. As they did our new logo, our new website, they did the Gator Good Foundation website, and they did the marketing for the Charleston Gator Club. And they also have more Gator-related projects on the horizon. So if you're listening to this pod and your brand or company needs help in any of the aforementioned areas, rest assured that Stingray Branding will more than take care of you. To view their full list of services and rights, go to stingraybranding.com. All right, Neil. Big pod tonight. I know we're still a couple weeks away from fall camp. We're now a week away from SEC Media Days. Potentially another commitment could be coming this week. We'll touch on that a little bit tonight. But the biggest news in Gator Nation is the future of the Swamp. And many of us who grew up Gator fans in the 90s like you and I, Neil, and obviously some of our listeners are even older than that, have remembered the Swamp kind of come up and be what it is today, to be that 90,000 seat stadium. But it does sound like some of that is potentially changing soon. And the Florida Gators, a couple of years ago, commissioned an investigative team to look at ways that they could improve the Swamp. And it was anything from increasing capacity to decreasing capacity to how they can improve fan experience, and just overall enjoyment of being at the football stadium. But that has come back. They are now ready to select an architect this month. They'll go through the formal public review process, as all University of Florida projects do that. And they'll select an architect, and that's going to take, obviously, some time. I'm an architect. I work for an architecture firm myself, so I know that these things do take time even once the architect is selected. So it is going to take some time before, after the architect is selected, the design process happens. You go out for bidding for the contractors, and then they finally select that, and then the work actually begins, which will take even more time. So we're still several years away from any of what we're about to discuss happening tonight. But all the seeds of this finally are coming to fruition, and Gator fans certainly are voicing their opinions on what they're hearing is the potential design direction that the University of Florida wants to go. So, Neil, let's start with your thoughts on what you're hearing right now and kind of how you and a lot of Gator Nation are responding to it. The report that is, and this is in the links that Neil has been sending out on his Twitter account, so invite you all to go check that out, but is that we're looking at a stadium reduction of up down to 75,000 people. So that would be a 15,000 seat reduction from where we know it right now. Neil, what are your thoughts kind of on that initially? And, you know, just what do you think it means? What would we mean if we actually did go that route?
Well, I mean, I think as everyone knows by now, I started a petition to call for Scott Strickland and Chip Howard, who's the associate AD, who's basically responsible for all these types of construction projects, to not do that, to not do what's in those documents that have been listed on the University of Florida's virtual library for a couple of years now. I mean, we all knew the Swamp was going to get reduced in terms of seating capacity. I think everyone, you know, took Scott Strickland seriously when he said that. I just don't think it was quite widely regarded to be as severe of a reduction as it's going to be. Because, I mean, looking at the plans right now, there are ADA compliance rules and regulations. We'll get into that in a minute. But there, long story short, there are rules and regulations that are going to force Florida to, if they do anything at all to touch that lower bowl, that are going to force them to remove a few thousand seats, which I think a lot of Gator fans are clamoring for, in the sense that they think that the seats are too narrow and the aisles are too narrow. And I happen to agree with both of those points, but the math that's being done by the UAA and listed in those documents is essentially kill 13, 14, 15, 16 or so thousand seats. That's just my best estimate from reading over the plans, but that's what it's going to look like. It's going to be a reduction of about 14 or 15 or so thousand seats out of the capacity. And there are all kinds of logistical and economical problems that that's going to present for Florida fans, not the least of which is going to be the bidding over tickets and the UAA price gouging the absolute hell out of everyone from their own ticket office. But it's just, it's disconcerting. It's frightening to think about what it's going to wind up costing the average Gator fan to go see their favorite team play in the Swamp on Saturdays once this is all completed.
Yeah, and the estimated construction cost right now at this present time, the figure that came out was $400 million. It would be the largest construction project in the history of the University of Florida. So I think fans are certainly going to, they're going to look at that and say, where that obviously is that money coming from? And in addition to that, does that mean our ticket prices are going to go up? I would imagine yes. And I think the gamble is that they're saying the product on the field hopefully is better at that point in the Billy Napier tenure. And then, of course, if they're increasing the amenities and the fan experience and the ease of getting to and from your seat, the overall comfort, enjoyment of the game, fans might be willing to do that. Also, to note, this is kind of a trend in college football right now where a lot of stadiums are starting to reduce capacity just because of TV. It's better to go just watch the game from your home and TV, which we'll talk a little bit more later in that argument. But those are some of the factors of why the UAA is looking at going this direction. So, Neil, with that said, you did start a petition aimed at going at the UAA. Why did you feel compelled to do that? And how can Gator fans, if they are interested, getting involved in that process, how can they do that?
Sure. So I'll take the second question first, I guess. The easiest way to probably find it is just go onto our Twitter at All Kinds Weather. It's on our Facebook page too, in All Kinds of Weather on Facebook. So you can just find it there pretty easily. It's under change.org. It's just titled Save the Swamp, Keep Ben Hill Griffin Stadium's Capacity at Least 85,000. And I started it because I knew someone was going to do it sooner or later. I wanted the argument against decimating the Swamp's capacity to be laid out pretty clearly and thoroughly, and having demonstrated some knowledge of the UAA's plan, so that when it inevitably does find itself on their desks and they read it, they can see that the people who oppose their plans to reduce the capacity know what they're talking about and can at least come close to matching their level of thought and effort and response. Because it's really easy just to stand up and scream out, don't shrink the swamp, save the swamp, don't reduce the capacity, and not really think about the hows and whys of how you're going to make that happen. And that's all well and good until you start asking questions like, okay, be pretending to be the UAA right now. Okay, you don't want to touch capacity. Well, did you know that we, as the UAA, if we do anything to touch the lower bowl of Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, we are legally obligated to modify the structure of the seating and the aisles to be in compliance with ADA regulations? Like, that's not our call. That's not the University of Florida saying that. That's the law. That's just a rule that's in place that we have to abide by. The aisles have to be expanded from 36 inches to 48 inches. The seats have to be expanded from 16.9 inches wide to 19 inches wide. There's not room to negotiate with that. It's legally required in the 2010 ADA standards for accessible design. And then the person's going to go, I didn't think about that. And then their whole argument is sunk, and it makes it that much easier for the UAA to dismiss it out of hand, because then they can just go, yeah, see, we actually thought everything through, and the person, or the people who don't like it, just don't know what they're talking about. We don't have a choice here. So I wanted to be sure that when this petition was inevitably launched by someone, it was done by someone who did his research, had a counter proposal ready for the obvious responses that the UAA inevitably would shoot back with, and someone who can speak their language, which is money, because, you know, let's face it, we know that's what this is all about. Money is driving this. And I address that all in the petition too. I'm sure that we'll talk about the ins and outs and the details of it more in a second, but just for the sake of answering that opening question, I wanted to be sure that the petition that would eventually go viral and gain all the attention that some petition of this nature was going to wind up generating would be well-researched, well thought out, and address the obvious points of contention that Scott Strickland and Chip Howard would clap back with.
Well, and I think you're starting to get some traction, Neil, even as I just went on when you started your monologue there. We were at 780 signatures, and in just that time you just finished, we were up to 793. So people are clicking on the link. They are signing it, and invite everybody to continue to go online, sign it, share it, retweet it, share with your friends and family on any social media platforms out there to get the word out. And I think, Neil, we're realists here, right? I think we understand that there's a pretty legit possibility that it's going to be reduced below 85,000. I'm of the opinion that I say keep it around 82,000-83,000, which is historically where it was in the early 1990s after they added the north end zone. And, you know, the swamp was the swamp back then, that we had an incredible home field advantage. So I still think if you're keeping it in the low 80s, you're going to have a very good home field advantage for generations to come if you have a good product on the field, good coaches and all that. But I think the objective of this, of something like this, is to get their attention, because one of the things thus far that, and I'll make this point, is that I don't think the UAA has done a very good job of engaging the fan base of what they want in this process. And during the design process, after they've selected an architect, I really hope that they engage the fan base and ask them truly what they want. Because if we're going to go out and we're going to spend $400 million of donor money and we're going to do all these renovations and in all likelihood potentially change where we play football for a season. I mean, this is a very dramatic renovation. Like, this isn't just something that's going to happen in an off season. We need to do this right, and I think the fans deserve to have a say. So this is one way to do that and start to cap that conversation, saying, okay, we would really like to keep it at 85,000, but hopefully this garners enough signatures where, you know, we have people engaged in the process during design so that the stadium and the finished product that we receive is something that everybody can be proud of. The UAA is happy with the results. They see the bottom line. And the fans ultimately are happy with the stadium that they will go to for many, many years to come.
And just a quick point of contention. You mentioned the $400 million figure. That's kind of false. that's actually blatantly false, because there's an interview done with Chip Howard from the Gainesville Sun that's actually just been put behind a paywall, like in the last 10, 15 minutes, but was publicly accessible before, that I happened to read. If you do have a subscription to the Gainesville Sun, I encourage you to go get it and share it and you know, screen record or screenshot it or whatever, so everyone else can see this. But Chip Howard was quoted as saying, we're talking about a billion plus. 400 million was just a starting, basic opening estimate before we really delved too deeply into it. Chip Howard who is essentially the guy who is in charge of this. It's not even Strickland. Chip Howard is the one whose signature is on that document that I cited that has all their plans written out pretty clearly in it. Chip Howard himself said, yeah, it's going to be more than twice that. So it's going to be a lot of money. And to your point about asking what the fans want, I think they do care about what the fans want, but not what all the fans want. They care, and we'll talk about this in a minute too, they care about their top dollar donors. They care about what their Hugh Hathcocks, their Gary Condrins, their Heavener families, they care about what that income bracket wants. They don't care about what the totality of the fans want. And there is a big difference between those two things. And I think one that, you know, again, we'll talk about in a second, but I think one that overall will do more to harm the product that we wind up cheering for than help it.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll see. And I think that, you know, just looking at it too with construction costs, anytime you get a number out there, 99.9% of the time, it's always going to be higher. It's natural. Construction cost escalation costs happen in the last several years. Anybody that's in the construction industry is very familiar with some of the supply chain issues that we've had. It's put a lot of constraint on materials of sourcing them and also labor. So construction costs have been volatile for the last several years. Hopefully it gets better in the years to come, but naturally there's still going to be an increase in the construction cost index over the next decade. So I would expect that number just to go up even more so already. So it's a big undertaking. I mean, this is something is going to impact Florida football for generations to come. It really will. I there's no other way to look at it, whether it's good or bad, who knows, but you know, Neil, I think that there's some decisions that are going to be made over the next couple of years. We need the right people making the decisions. We also need the fans to just be engaged, I think, and have a seat at the table in a genuine form and fashion to be a part of the conversation. So we've talked about, you know, our thoughts on this. I think, Neil, you sit on the side of let's keep it at least at 85. I'm like, okay, if we can keep it at least above 80, I'm happy with that. But what are the things that we all agree, I think the Swamp could use a facelift. What are the things that they can be doing to the stadium to upgrade it so the fan experience is increased? You have a new donor class that comes in and is excited to go to games. People are having enjoyment at the games. What can we do to the Swamp and still maintain that capacity that fans want?
Right. So I think that finding the answer to that question is going to be the key to keeping the capacity at 85,000. Or look, if it winds up being 84,665, okay, I'll live with that. That's fine. But I think the answer lies with the east side stands, because there's not really a ton of activity that's directly to the east of the stadium. If you go too much farther to the east, there is going to wind up being a pool there. There are some buildings that would have to probably get raised. So you're not going to build, you know, another 50 or 60 rows there without digging into that infrastructure. But you can tack on another 6, 7, 8 or so rows to the top of the east stands without really doing anything to affect the road that's right next to the stadium. My solution would be to just add a few more rows, not luxury boxes, but add more general seating to those east side stands that would extend from the northeast corner of the stadium down to the southeast corner where the expanded video board is going to wind up ending. And, you know, you stop it there, but that can itself add a couple thousand more seats to it. So if we're talking about ways to increase fan comfort and keep the seating capacity as high as possible, I mean, that seems like the easiest way to do it, because the north and south end zones are going to have expanded video boards. So you can't really build up on either end zone. And the west stands already have the luxury boxes. They have the press boxes. They have all kinds of stuff. And there's already the grand entrance on the west side where you don't want to just completely dismantle that either with the statues and all that. So you don't want to really build too much on the west side. So looking at the stadium right now on my phone, the east side seems like it's the solution for this. And I don't see another way around it. And you can keep that comfort for everyone else by adhering to those same ADA guidelines on the expanded seating rows.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think, you know, definitely some more club level seating, you know, and just overall renovation of the stadium. The timeline, we really haven't done. We did an expansion in 2008, technically, of the expansion of the football offices where you have that entry into where those crystal ball trophies were put. We haven't really done any expansion in the stadium since that time. We have done a renovation of the West Concourse, so that where the alumni side is. It's very nice. They put some new graphics up, dressed it up. It's compared to the student section side, where it kind of looks like you're in a dungeon and you have those old lights that are make it very dim and dark. So I think overall, just like if you did what you did on the West Concourse throughout the entire stadium, that alone right there, just the facelift would make it a better, I think, just experience for the fans, at least on the student section side. I definitely think, you know, there needs to be a lot more ease of access and better wayfinding throughout the facility. Right now, it's very outdated. It's something stuck in the 1980s still. You know, I think that if there's a way to increase efficiency and getting fans in and out of the stadium, especially before, because it seems like there's a lot of log jams, a lot of bottlenecks, wait times getting in the stadium, especially for the big games, is absolutely incredibly long. I think there's got to be a way to increase the efficiencies of getting large mass amounts of crowds into the stadium. That needs to be a priority in this renovation. And also, I just think, you know, more options for fan, like more fan engaging things to do throughout the stadium concourse. You know, obviously having, you know, food more readily available where people don't have to wait as long for food or drink. And that way they're back in the seats and just, you know, more, you know, comfort there. I think that's good. I like the idea of having the chairbacks, to be honest, and getting rid of the bleachers. As a season ticket holder, I'm the one that will buy the chairbacks and put them on my seats. I like it. I think it's great to, it also just kind of helps with the issues of, you know, people not sitting in the right seats they're supposed to be sitting in, that it tends to be an issue when you have a stadium full of bleachers like the Swamp. And I know that's definitely a thing in the student section. It probably could actually decrease the amount of fan incidents that you have at a game when you do have chairback seating, which is, would be a lot better and make for, I think, a better experience for everybody that goes to the games. Cause a lot of times when those incidents happen, everybody around that group of people is affected by it. So those are some other additional things on top of what Neil said, because I agree with everything that Neil said too. I think the video boards are something that needs to be something in the 21st century here. And you look at some of the cool video boards that have come out at the newer stadiums in the last several years. Not necessarily saying we need something like at Jerry's World or even in Jacksonville, what they have there. But I think that it could definitely be improved. And where people actually know what's going on, they can see replays easier, they can see the scores, the statistics up on the screen, and there's more advertising space too for other people if they want to put their ads up, and they can obviously sell that. So overall, I just think a complete facelift renovation to all areas of the Swamp, better lighting, better wayfinding, increased efficiencies getting in and out of the stadium so people can actually be at their seats and enjoying the game. And be loud in the process, keep that home field advantage that I think that we are talking about. So, Neil, this is maybe where we kind of, I don't want to say differ a lot, but I do think maybe there is a little bit of a difference of opinion here. Could you believe that this is a big deterrent? So what are the big pitfalls and fallbacks of decreasing the stadium capacity by this much?
Well, I think it's twofold. And I think that you and I are going to agree on the basic principles of these. It's, I think, as you just mentioned, the extents to which these will have detrimental effects that we disagree. Number one is money. It's what I learned on day one of econ class as a freshman in college. It's, I think, what we all learned on day one of any econ class that any of us ever took, is that supply and demand have a direct and inverse relationship with each other. You know, if you add supply, demand is going to go down for each ticket, and therefore the price is going to go down because everyone thinks, you know, $80 for this seat. Now I'll wait till someone posts a listing for a similar seat for $65. And eventually the price is going to go down like an elevator with a busted cable. Now do the reverse and take seats away. Suddenly the UAA can make the claim of, hey, space is limited, act now, with those urgent salesman-y type pitches, be a little bit more of that aggressive salesman that we talked about Billy Napier being on the recruiting trail, except now you're doing it with the common fan and their money, who's already seeing prices of everything from pub subs to gas money going up because of inflation. And so they'll use that to justify charging twice what they currently do now for their tickets. And if you think the UAA is going to price gouge its fans, just wait until 2029 or so, when the Oklahoma Sooners come to town for the first time ever, and they're a top 10 team, and Florida will be ranked somewhere. It doesn't matter where. They're a ranked team, and Oklahoma's in the top 10. What do you think is going to happen to the price of those tickets on the resale market? People aren't going to be able to afford them because, again, with some 12, 13, 14-ish or so thousand seats fewer, then would be available. If this game happened tomorrow, scalpers are going to know that they can get away with charging a lot more, and they're going to bleed the common fan out of half their savings just to get in to see the game. And some people aren't going to care. Like we said at the start, some people will not care. Your rich boosters, the people who currently pay for season tickets in the luxury boxes in the Champions Club, they will not care. But that categorization does not apply to the majority of this fan base. And that's just with the regular seating. I'm not even talking about the luxury box plans with it. When I say this, Chip Howard said in that interview with the Gainesville Sun that Florida plans to more than double its supply of premium seating, which is crazy. If you think about it, that there's about 8,000 or so luxury box seats right now. Do you really need to double that? I mean, is 8,000 not enough? If you double that number, it's going to force you to take out even more seats, which again, great for your top dollar boosters. That's great for your Hugh Hathcocks and Gary Condrens. That income bracket's not going to care. The rest are going to care. And for a business that needs support from fans in all income brackets, I mean, let's call a spade here, Chris. It was not Gary Condren. It was not Hugh Hathcock. It was not the Heaviter family who were making the noise that forced Bryce Young in Alabama to have to burn a timeout late in that 2021 game because they couldn't hear the signals. You don't want to brush away and dismiss the people who teamed up to give you that competitive advantage. And that's the second reason I hate the idea of reducing capacity that much. We need those fans in the swamp for a competitive advantage. I'm not advocating for people to get super drunk and start fights in the stands, but you know what? Yeah, we do need a hostile environment. We do. Every fan who is in the swamp yelling when Florida is on defense contributes to those decibel levels. And again, like I said at the start, some of those seats are just going to have to go and there's no debating it. Like we said, there are ADA regulations that any renovations are going to have to satisfy. And that's going to have a small effect on the decibel levels. But my point is that the impact you have on those decibel levels should be as minimal as humanly possible. Obeying the law and the guidelines, yeah, that has to be priority number one. And the basic level of increased comfort that fans have been clamoring for are going to be taken care of by following that top priority. Priority number two has to be maintaining that competitive advantage by any means possible. So I know I'm sure we'll talk about how to balance those two in a little bit, but the idea of actively not caring about what the 99% of the fan base wants and only factoring in what the 1% wants, doing anything to reduce that home field advantage is just mystifying to me. So look, if you're Scott Strickland and if you're Chip Howard, I understand that this is a business. It is about money. It has to be about money. The University of Florida Athletics Association is a business. Businesses have to make money. I completely understand that. But my whole thesis here is that as an athletic director, as an associate athletic director, as the people whose signatures are on these documents that lay out these plans, which essentially means you're the CEO of this business. Yes, money is important, but it should not be coming in as a benefit of enraging the majority of your fan base. That is horrible business ethics to put your consumers in the position of not having a choice but to pay out the nose to get something that they have no other way of getting because there's not another home field that Florida plays games in. I mean, there's Jacksonville, but there's less than... I don't know about that. There's about a third of the tickets available for Florida fans for that game that there are in the swamp. And really, the reason that myself and I'm sure you and the reason everyone else who signed that petition, which is now, by the way, at over 800 signatures, the reason we all want you to keep as many seats in the swamp as possible is so that we can help you and the program you represent. We want to contribute to that deafening noise that causes mayhem for opponents. Is it as important to the Gator success as recruiting top five classes and calling the right plays as coaches? No, I know people are going to clap back with that. No, you know what? We should be focusing on top five recruiting classes and Napier improving his play. I know everyone's going to come back with that. It doesn't, the swamp's capacity is not as important as those things, but it's nonetheless a piece of the puzzle that goes into a championship caliber team. So again, if you're going to pull the levers that result in these ticket prices spiking and essentially pricing out 15% or so of your customers, and leaving the remaining 85% to collectively outbid their 2023 former selves. You can do it. I'm not saying people won't pay it. They will, but it just gets very difficult to believe that you have any iota of care for what's best for the totality of your fans and the program that they cheer for.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think the thing is you want to be bringing in more families, more people, and doing a move like this where you are price gouging and shifting the cost to your consumers, it is not going to help with those matters. You will get, a lot of us will pay those prices because we love the University of Florida. We want to go to games, but there are going to be people that don't have the means to do it. So it's going to be a shame to kind of see that. And I agree. We've got to keep it a hostile environment. We've got to keep it loud. We want to continue to have those awesome moments that we've had over the last several years, like in Auburn in 2019, in LSU in 2018, a Tennessee in 17 and 15, you know, all the way back to 97, Florida State, that the UAA recently just shared that clip of that game out there in that final drive. You know, those were some incredible moments in the Swamp, and that's just scratching the surface. So we want to be able to continue to have those moments. The only one caveat I will say, Neil, is I think crowd noise does play a factor in home field advantage. There's no doubt about it. My only thing is I think that the product on the field matters a lot more than, you know, I'm saying, like, I don't, if, like, God forbid, worst case scenario, we're down to 75,000, I still think the Swamp would be a hostile environment. I do think it would still be one of the toughest places to play in all of college football. And that's only if, though, the product on the field's good, the coaching's good. If you look at the time period from 1990 to 2001, back when the Swamp was only 85,000 in capacity, 85,000, we had a 68-5 record. We lost 5 games in 12 years. Since 2010, when Urban Meyer in his last season, and then since then he's left, we've had 21 losses alone in that time period. And I think it has a lot more, and we have more capacity now, 90,000. So I'm not sure, like, there's as much of a correlation. It's more about having a good team on the field, and then that energizes the fan base to be more loud, to go to more games, to fill the stadium, to buy the tickets. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you've got to have a great product on the field. You've got to have a coaching staff that knows how to coach guys up and win games. And when you do that, success can happen. Urban Meyer, in his first 5 years at Florida, only lost 2 games. He was 32-2. You know, that those are incredible records between him and Coach Spurrier, what they did during that stretch of time. Ultimately, we've got to see a better product on the field, which we've been talking ad nauseum for the last several years at. We're hoping that Billy Napier is the right guy. We believe he is the right guy, and he certainly could be affected by this. But I think that stadium capacity isn't everything. I think the issues we're getting into now, Neil, are more about doing the right thing by your consumer and your alumni, your fans. That's what it's more about here than it is actually about keeping it a hostile environment, because I think it will be a hostile environment so long as the team is good.
Well, again, you listed the Spurrier years where capacity was about 85,000 or so, and that's what I want to keep it at now. I agree, if you take out 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 or so seats, it will remain a hostile environment, mainly because most of those seats can be taken right out of the visitors' allotment, which is another point of contention that's probably best for another day. But long story short, the SEC mandated minimum for visitors' ticket allotments in SEC stadiums is 6,000 fans. Florida currently offers 8,000. So if Florida is going to take some seats out, you have to believe, and it would be really stupid to not take those seats out of the 8,000 by 2,000 to reduce our allotment to the SEC mandated minimum of 6,000. And then if you're going to sacrifice maybe, you know, 1,500 or 2,000 or so seats that would come out of the Florida fan base, then okay, that's minimal. That's just, you know, limiting the damage. It's when you talk about taking out 5 digits worth of seats, when you talk about reducing capacity by 12,000, by 13,000, there are some possibilities in that document that are horrifying, that list out the possibility of taking out more than 20,000 seats. That is where I get concerned that you're taking a lot of the venom out of what makes the swamp so hostile. So, I mean, long story short, I do understand that, you know, removing a minimal number of seats is not going to have that much impact on the hostility of Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. But it's when you start flirting with that number in the five digits of more than 10,000 that it starts to become a really big issue. And honestly, I really do resent this idea that the Swamp is this unwinnable place for opponents to come into. And Scott Strickland and Chip Howard and the people who have come out in support of this Shrink the Swamp initiative, the high dollar donors who don't care if they remove 25,000 seats. I literally had a guy on Twitter tell me, yeah, I'm okay with shrinking the swamp by 23,000 seats if it means that I can physically handle it. Sorry, Gage, at Gator Gage, but yeah, that needed to be said. That there are people out there who literally do not care if the swamp's capacity is reduced by more than 20,000 seats if it means their personal comfort. And that these people are going to play the game of, well, let's see how much we can reduce capacity by and still keep its venom intact and still keep the bite that it brings for opposing teams intact. No, you shouldn't be doing that. That shouldn't be the goal. You shouldn't be trying to see exactly how much you can shrink the place while keeping its magic alive. That shouldn't be the goal. Again, I understand the ADA compliance regulations. That's all fine and good. But to think that the UAA is going to sacrifice even a smidge of this place's aura of invincibility for a little bit more legroom for its fans is just unconscionable to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we've got to keep it in the 80s at all cost. And, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see as things go on. But certainly, if as we've said, sign Neil's petition, get out there, support it, share it. And let's hope to be a part of the process. Just let the UAA know that the fans want to be a part of this process as we plan.
And be respectful when you do, too. Like, if you're going to contact the UAA, like, because, I mean, people have already commented with links to email them and call them. If you just contact them and say, you're a moron, you should be fired, that's not going to do anything. They're not going to listen to that. So be respectful. Be polite. Just know what you're asking for. Clearly couch it as something that is going to benefit them and the program that they represent, and just ask nicely. There's nothing to be gained from being hostile about it. Save the hostility for when you're in the swamp yelling at the opposing offense.
Agreed. Totally agree. Well, Neil, I think that does it for the stadium talk. I did want to bring up it tonight is, and it's actually about to start here at the time of this recording in about 24 minutes, and that is the MLB draft. And our very own Wyatt Langford is now the betting favorite to be the number one overall pick in the Major League draft. He would be the highest Florida Gator to be selected in the MLB draft, and the highest being Mike Zunino, who was selected by the Seattle Mariners at number 3 overall. Many are projecting that Wyatt will not slip past the number 3 spot where the Detroit Tigers currently own that pick. The Pittsburgh Pirates own the number 1 pick. So we'll have to see, Neil. I think it'd be really great, though, for the program to have that. And obviously, Herschel Waldrop is projected as a top 15 pick. So we would have another season with 2 first-round picks. Of course, I would expect Brandon Sproat to increase his draft stock a little bit from where it was last year. He'll get drafted probably, I don't know, in the first round, but definitely second or third round. Josh Rivera is looking at potentially being a top 75 overall pick. And then also not to mention there's the picks that Kevin O'Sullivan continues to recruit at a high level. Many believe he'll at least have a couple of prospects that get drafted high enough where they wouldn't probably come to the University of Florida. So, Neil, just let us know what you think about the prospects of the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know their teams yet. We don't know their futures yet. And the reality is, I mean, we're doing this pod now because it doesn't really matter where they're drafted because teams trade minor league prospects and draft picks all the time. So there's, I don't want to say a good chance, but there's a legitimate chance that the teams that draft these players will not ultimately be where they come up and play their major league baseball. But I mean, Josh Rivera, a guy that Florida's really going to miss for both his slick fielding and his power hitting at the college level. I think those are two things that the MLB scouts are really, really salivating over. A shortstop that can hit for power. Obviously, the translation from aluminum to wood bats is not always the most accurate, but the fact that he does put the bat on the ball, the fat part of the bat on the ball, and hit gaps a lot, something I think is going to be very, very attractive for a shortstop. Brandon Sproat, a guy that I don't know if he's going to go first or second round. He could sneak in the second round. It wouldn't shock me. The stuff is there. The elite ability is there. The velocity on the fastball, he's got more pitches than that. He can fool batters with a changeup or the breaking ball if he has to. So all that's going to entice major league teams. He will, I think, improve on that number 90 slot he was taken last year. I don't know if it will be significantly, but I do think he will go late second, maybe early third round or so, which would be an improvement and would net him more money and thus would be the right decision for him to have come back this year. Obviously, the stars are going to be Waldrop and Langford. Langford projected to go number one as of right now to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Hurst and Waldrop, more of a tween sort of projection right now. I've seen as high as 11 and 12. I've seen as low as like 17 or 18. I even saw one mock draft having him go 23. So a bit of a range there, but mid first round, I think, is where we can expect him to go. Waldrop, just absolutely filthy stuff for Florida last year. Unlike Sproat, he was a lot more consistent with his results. I mean, they both had the major league stuff, as the scouts put it, but I mean, Waldrop just got more guys out and gave up fewer runs and hits. And I think scouts are going to take note of that. And that's why he'll be drafted higher than Sproat, even though Sproat was the number one starter for Florida and Waldrop went number two. And I mean, Langford is just, he can do everything. He can hit for power. He's fast. He can steal bases. He's a tremendous fielder himself in the outfield. And there's really not a weakness with him. And I don't really see a reason why he wouldn't go top three. I think there's some debate about who goes one and two. There's some talk about maybe a Paul Skeens or a Dylan Cruz or a Max Clark maybe slipping in there. But I mean, I think that those guys may want a little bit more than their slot value to get pick number one. And if that happens, there's no point in drafting them. So I think Langford will be the best value pick for number one. I don't really think he's going to care about getting more than the slot value, as it's already plenty for him. And he's, you know, he's not going to wobble over the exact dollar and cents he's going to get paid to be number one. He'll gladly take it and be happy with it. So because of that, I think he will wind up being the number one overall pick. It's also possible that these are just rumors that were drummed up by some people with some ulterior motives. Wyatt Langford, I could definitely see going behind Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. I do think those are the two best players in this year's MLB draft. I don't think he would fall any farther than three. I guess it's possible. Powers could go three. I'm not seeing that. But in any case, Wyatt Langford definitely projected to be one of the top picks in this MLB draft. And yeah, I mean, Florida going to lose four very, very valuable pieces. Well, five, BT Raipel, but he's not going to the MLB. But yeah, exciting to see where those guys wind up. Exciting to see where they begin their professional baseball journeys. Again, that doesn't necessarily dictate where they will come up through the minors or start their major league careers, but would be fun to see where those guys will begin their professional careers.
Yeah, and we certainly wish them the best of luck. It's a journey to the MLB. Even guys that are drafted in the first round often or spend a couple of years or some time in the minor leagues before they are called up. So, you know, it's a journey for these guys, and we wish them all the best and hope that we continue to have a really strong track record of putting guys in the major leagues. And I think we have over the last several years, Neil, like, you know, guys like Alex Fajardo, Brady Singer, Jonathan India, but obviously Pete Alonso, who's now become the home run king of the home run derby. You know, there's been some really good names, and I know I'm probably missing. I'm just scratching the surface there, but
Harrison Bader.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Harrison Bader. I mean, there's just been so many, and I'm really excited just to see what these guys do. And I think Wyatt Langford is, if he could work on his fielding a little bit more in the outfield, I think he could become a true five-tool player for any ball club out there. So I think there's an incredible value for him at number one. And I think of all those guys, Skeens, Langford, and Cruz, I think he has the best career out of all three. I really do believe that. Just watching him, I think he truly has all the makeups of what it takes to be five-tool player at the major league level. And, you know, we'll see. Wish him the best of luck. Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh's starting to be on the come up. They've had some rough years, but now they're starting to improve. So he'd be going to an improving organization. So I think it'd be a good spot for him up there.
And remember who they drafted last year with their first round pick.
Who was that?
Former Florida Gator teammate, Hunter Barco. So that could be a nice reunion of Gators in the majors if they both come up through their organization. But yeah, I just want to really quickly push back on the Wyatt Langford fielding part of that. He's not a bad fielder. He's very fast. He can cover a lot of ground. I think maybe some of his issues come with tracking the ball off the bat, which, you know, that could all be coached. I think he's got what is needed to be a major league fielder, a very good major league fielder, because he has that speed and can cover that much ground. And he has good instincts off. Like, I mean, you can see it when he's running the bases. He does get a good jump a lot when he's trying to steal bases. So I think that that's very translatable to the outfield if he just is coached on it and he's drilled enough on the ins and outs of being an MLB outfielder. But the potential for him to be a very, very good MLB outfielder is definitely there with him. It's not something I would categorize as necessarily a weakness. It's something I'd categorize as could be worked on.
Yeah. No, and that's all part of going to major leagues and going up to the minor league system and getting the right coaching and development along the way. Really quick, Neil, before we head off for the night, I did want to touch on, we are expecting a commitment decision from Fletcher Westfall, offensive tackle, prospect that we've talked a lot about on here, and many believe it's down between us and Clemson. You know, there were some crystal balls a couple of days ago that came in for him to go to Clemson, and then just today we've seen something start to change and trend in the Florida direction. So it would be a huge get for the Gators. It'd be their first blue chip offensive lineman prospect of this cycle. We have talked about how Florida needs to start pulling in some of those to really cap that class off, but it would give us four solid offensive linemen for the 2024 class. It would add another blue chip, it would add another top 300 player, and it would also bump our ranking up a little bit. So we'd be solidly in that top three ranking. It would give us 18 commitments thus far to date, with certainly some more hopefully to come in the coming weeks before the football season starts. So a lot to be excited about there, and hopefully we do get his commitment, but we'll be on the lookout for that if that does come, for our commitment graphic and story to follow. So make sure to check in for that. And then, of course, this week, Neil, we've got SEC Media Days, next week will be SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. So big, you know, time there for talking season. As Coach Breuer would always say, it's talking season. And, you know, I'm sure the media is going to give Florida a very favorable ranking or prediction for the SEC East. I say that sarcastically. They're not going to do that. I would expect Florida to be toward the back half of the SEC East. Maybe ahead of Vanderbilt, Missouri. But I could see them slotting in around that 4 or 5 spot.
I was told by prognosticators on Twitter that Florida was going to go 2-10 this year, and they clearly know what they're talking about. So I don't know if the media is going to be any more favorable, but I mean, 2-10 seems like the ceiling just from listening to these people.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to really struggle to beat McNeese State and Charlotte.
Well, hey, we did almost lose to USF last year. I'll just throw that out there.
That is true.
That's ridiculous. Look, I'm not going to go on here and proclaim that Florida is going to be the SEC East favorite. They're going to sneak into the playoff or anything like that. But to think that Florida is going to be, you know, 4-8 or worse is outright ridiculous. 5-7 seems like the doomsday scenario for them.
Yeah,
I mean, this is probably the realistic worst case.
I agree. I think 5-7 is probably the floor, and I think that the ceiling is probably 8-4, 9-3. I mean, I don't think there's actually a big gap in what Florida's going to be this year. I think they kind of are what they are. They're going to be a pretty average team, but I do think they're going to be an improved team, especially on defense. It can't honestly get much worse, as we've said in some of our articles on our website. It literally cannot get that much worse. And I do think Austin Armstrong is going to infuse some energy and just some tactical prowess on the defensive side of the ball. We've also brought in some really good transfers on the defensive lineman and the linebacker room that I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. So I do think we're going to see some improvement on the defensive side. And if we do, offense just needs to be they can afford a slight drop off in maybe the big play production that they had last year, because there were certainly some games where they put up a lot of points. It's just the defense gave up a lot more, and we lost those games. So I think
not just points, yards that would exhaust them and fry them so that they couldn't be trusted to do anything late in the game, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens, but we're now within 7 weeks of the college football season beginning, where we will kick off the college football season on Thursday night out in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to continue to put out some good content here over the next couple of weeks, previewing the season, previewing what's going on in the program. And we can't wait to talk about it all. Before we sign off for the night, I want to shout out our partners. First off, Alma Mater, a great partner of ours with apparel. They have their link up at the top of our header on inallkindsweather.com. So make sure to click that link and buy some merch for the upcoming football season. Also want to shout out the Gator Good Foundation, as they now have selected the Arkansas Razorbacks game on the first weekend of November to be the game where they will send a Gator fan who is a former veteran, served in the military, one of the branches there. So looking for a specific Gator fan in that regard who has served our country honorably, and we'd like to reward them for their service by sending them to their first Gator game, his or her first Gator game, in the swamp against the Arkansas Razorback. So please go to GatorGood at gmail.com to email us and support that effort in doing so.
GatorGoodFoundation at gmail.com.
Yep, that's it.
Fun fact, Chris, Gator Good Foundation has a 4-0 record of bringing people to the swamp. We've won every time. Beat South Carolina in 2018 with that crazy comeback. 2019, we obliterated Vanderbilt 56-0. 2021, we obliterated Tennessee. And this past season, we beat Missouri. So 4-0, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, we got to keep that up. I think Arkansas is one of those games where it's a good chance to keep it at 5-0. And to note, that's going to be the first all-black game.
Yes.
As well. And I love that. And I'm not sure if you guys plan this, but being that is going to be the game where we honor our veterans, and also the proceeds of the apparel and the jerseys will be donated to veterans groups, as Billy Napier has already said in the past. So it's going to be a great weekend supporting our, you know, men and women who served our country. And hopefully we cap it off with a big win and get that record to 5-0.
Well, we did plan it. That's exactly why we chose that game, for that precise reason.
There you go. Makes sense.
I mean, working for a company that, you know, that is owned by a veteran, one of our sponsors being a veteran-owned company, it only makes sense that we continue that theme and put our money where our mouth is. So, yeah, looking forward to reading those. Looking forward to seeing where the Gators wind up getting drafted. Again, by the time this actually hits the public, they will have already been drafted. And just to reiterate again, the reason we feel comfortable talking about the guys just before the draft as opposed to after is because teams trade minor league prospects all the time. So there's really, it's not like the MLB or the NBA where it's virtually a given that the guys who were drafted by certain teams will wind up playing for those certain teams. So in any case, wished all those guys the best and look forward to seeing them continue their careers. And just to cap the pod here with the main thesis of it is, you know, Scott Strickland, Chip Howard, we do understand why you want to make the swamp more comfortable. I put that poll up and I asked people, do you want more comfort or do you want more seats to stay in there? And I think it's very telling that of the almost 4,000 people who have voted on it by now, 80% of them say more seats. That's not a mistake. The fan base has pretty clearly spoken, and they're pretty clearly speaking out in or with that petition. So I hope you guys listen. I know that a lot of emails and phone calls get thrown your way. I know a lot of them may or may not make the most sense. I encourage you to at least listen to this message and hear us out, because I have thought about the ADA requirements that are going to be forced upon you if you do anything to touch that lower bowl. I have thought about how people want more comfort in the very, very, very cramped quarters of those aisles and those seats there. I have thought all that through, and I just hope that you listen.
Well said. Well said. Well, we thank you all for tuning in to this episode of the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Please make sure to leave us a 5-star review and a comment in the review section. We need to start reading some of those reviews, Neil, in the upcoming episodes, but it certainly helps us grow our podcast and reach more people. And especially with football season coming up, we want to be doing that. And be sure to follow us on all of our social media and All Kinds of Weather on Twitter at In All Kinds Weather Recruiting, at An All Kinds of Weather Forecast on Twitter, as well as An All Kinds of Weather blog on Instagram. And then we have our An All Kinds of Weather Facebook page. On YouTube, we have the original An All Kinds of Weather page, and then the new YouTube page, the An All Kinds of Weather Forecast, which I invite all of you to go and subscribe as well. Thank you so much for all your time, and we hope we see lots of signatures on that petition. So, everybody have a good one. Go Gators.
Go Gators. Save the swamp.